Second hour, Darren Donica Chase here on this Monday. Hope everybody's having a good start to your week. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe with you. Max Hurst, manning the board at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Willie will join us a little bit later in the program. Every Monday at this time, we talk with TD. That is his podcast. He drops every week. You should check it out. NFL Nation reporter for ESPN and ESPN.com. He's Teron Davenport. He now joins us. Teron, we are about a month out from training camp, so we're getting a little bit closer to getting everything cranked up. What is a position battle that really, really interests you right now?
You know, to be honest with you, it's the backup quarterback position. I'm really
I knew you were going to say that.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
You know, I've been talking about DeShone Kizer
a
lot. And I've been impressed with him. And, you know, we know already what Logan Woodside could do. You know, I call him a Jeff Garcia-like quarterback, where he'll keep everything matriculating down the field. But I just like what Kizer brings to the table as far as pushing it down the field in the air, you know, like taking deep shots. However, I will also say this, just to give you on the flip side of the ball, I'm really intrigued about that cornerback position, because once Caleb Farley comes back and he's on the field, that right corner spot and nickel spot, that's going to be pretty cool to watch, because I know they would like Christian Fulton to take over that right corner position. And I got to talk to him over the weekend, and he's ready to go, you know, and he clearly has a lot of ability. We saw that at LSU. And then you got Elijah Molden in the mix, too, as far as the nickel is concerned. So they suddenly have a nice, awesome-looking rotation of cornerbacks. Obviously, you know, Jackrabbit Jenkins, he's on the left side locking that down. So I'm just curious how all that's going to play out, just the rotation itself.
You said you know what they have in Logan Woodside. How do you – I mean, I'm curious to hear. How do you know what they have? I mean, we've seen him throw a fake punt. I mean, how do we know what truly they have in Logan Woodside? Clearly,
well,
they love him, but, I mean, how do we really know?
This is where we differ. My catalog goes back to preseason games and watching them in those. So,
okay, there you go. Teron said that's all you got.
Peace out.
I definitely, you and I are on the same page on this, because I know you've been beating the drum on backup quarterback for a long time, and they, you know, they've really, in John Robinson's tenure, got it right once. Got it, like, hit a home run with that position once, with when they made the trade for Tannehill, and then even Mariota when he became the backup. But I think there are things I think we have Teron back. I think there's things that they see in practice that we obviously don't, that makes them feel confident in him.
We did not zap you. To my knowledge, we did not zap you. So the
that
floor
was,
is
look,
back,
man,
in yours.
That was DeShone Kizer saying, hey, man, you better stop talking good about him and talk about me. I think that's what happened. But no, just getting back to Woodside, I think really the thing is, and you're right, I mean, regular season-wise, we've seen him throw one pass. And so you got to take it with a, you know, in stride with context. But looking at preseason games, looking at him in practice, you know, one thing that comes to me is that he has very good control of the offense. And that's what I mean when I say matriculate the ball down the field. Like, he'll make the right reads, right? And it's just rarely going to be that deep in-breaking route, or that post down the field, or that corner route, you know, that Tannehill throws so well. So to me, that's the difference. And that's where we know what he could do, because he is a guy that can come in and operate the offense to an extent, and it just would be longer drives, and, you know, teams would be more inclined to stack the box, even though they already do it a lot as is. But I think there's less of a threat as far as stretching the field is concerned with Woodside than there is with Kizer or Tannehill.
I know you've been pro Kizer. In fact, I'm sure to this point you have to have a jersey by now. So you are pro Kizer.
Oh, no. Hold on now. Let's slow down now. No jersey or anything like that. I call it how I see it. That's all. And if I see a player doing well, hey, listen, I'm gonna call it out. Just the same as when I see a player doing bad, you know. So let's not do that. No jersey or anything like that. I'm objective, and you know, I call a spade a spade.
Okay, so why do you think, because you think Kizer's going to beat him out, why do you think that, you know, clearly there's something about Logan Woodside, this franchise, Mike Vrabel, John Robinson, these coaches, they like or love. I mean, they've made it abundantly clear. I mean, I've been, you know, counting him out for a good while now, and they just keep trotting him back. So why do you think a guy like DeShone Kizer is enough for them to say? Because, I mean, DeShone Kizer's night, but we've seen DeShone Kizer. I mean, I don't have a clue if he's any better than Logan Woodside when given an opportunity. We have at least seen him out there on Sundays. It didn't look great in my opinion, but why do you think Kizer actually beats out Woodside?
Well, I'll tell you, it's pretty simple, right? As a coach, what you typically want, especially an offensive coordinator, you want, if your lead guy goes down, you want to be able to put the next guy up into the situation without having to change a lot with the playbook. So that's really what it is. When you look at Kizer and when you look at Tannehill, they're very similar quarterbacks in that they're athletic. You could put them on the move as far as rolling the pocket, booting, those type of things, play action. They both have big arms where they could push the ball down the field. So that play action post that you love to see going to Khalif Raymond over the last couple of years, now Julio Jones, there's a match there, right? And then when you look at A.J. Brown running that deep in-breaking route off of play action, catching the football and blowing defenders up and running to the end zone, you have to have arm strength to do that, right, in addition to anticipation. Whereas Woodside, he's more of an anticipation type quarterback. Kizer is power and anticipation. So I think when you look at the grand scheme of things, again, God forbid something happen to Tannehill.
Yeah.
But if it does, you want to still be able to execute the offense similarly. And if you remember, go back to 2018, right? The Jaguars game. Or no, not the Jaguars game, Texans game.
Oh.
The Texans game. And you could go to the Colts game too. But when Mariota, you know, was not in the game, they had to use Kevin Byard to get a passing touchdown. You remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't want to be in that type of predicament. Now, I'm not saying Woodside is as bad as Gabbert, because I don't believe that to be the case, because Woodside has one thing that Gabbert doesn't, and that's he's not scared. So I think that's the difference between those guys. But to your point with the Colts game, you know, you had Jayon Brown having to single-handedly keep this team in the game in a win-or-go-home type of situation, and they ended up losing. And you don't want to be in that predicament. Your backup quarterback, and trust me, I know this from experience, covering the Eagles in 2017, right? Carson Wentz goes down week 11, Nick Foles comes in and just gradually gains momentum, and in the playoff he just blows up. And next thing you know, he's the daggone Super Bowl MVP. The backup quarterback position is more important than a lot of people really seem to think.
Oh, I know. I'm with you on that. How did people feel about Foles in that market at the time? Did anybody? What were people? Were people saying anything about him? Like when he was just sitting there as the backup holding the clipboard?
Yeah, I mean, he had already had a history because he had one of the best seasons ever for a quarterback. The 27 touchdown and 2 interception season he had under Chip Kelly.
Right.
So they knew he could play, but he bounced around. But I think it really, the love for him didn't really start happening until that Falcons game.
The run.
That's really,
okay.
Yeah, well, that was the first playoff game right there. That's when it really just kind of kicked off, that divisional game. And it's funny because when Wentz went down, man, Christmas was canceled in Philly. Let me tell you, people were distraught, man. And I'm not going to hold you. I was a little upset myself because my book came out, right? You know, my book on Wentz came out that Wednesday, and he went down that Sunday. So you remember A Bronx Tale. I was feeling like Eddie Mush, you know what I mean? But everything ended up working for them, and look what happened with Foles. And he, you know, he's beloved. I mean, the man has a daggone statue up there on the sports complex off of Patterson and Broad.
Mm. Speaking with TD, presented by Freedom Tire Guys, this time every Monday. What do you think about the right tackle, that battle? How do you think that's going to play out in camp?
Good question. I think it's going to play out. It's going to be – I think looking at it, I still think Tyson Brelo is going to open up camp as the first team right tackle. But in my opinion, he and Kendall Lamb are going to get the bulk of the snaps. And they're so preoccupied with getting Dylan Raiden's reps all over. I mean, he's playing all over the offensive line, outside of center. You know what I mean? He's pretty much up and down the offensive line. And I think if you want him to be the right tackle, you're probably going to have to hone in on that position, right? Because when you're learning, I mean, left tackle, right tackle, like it's two different things. You know what I mean? There's different steps. You know, it's kind of difficult to do both, especially as a rookie. So I think he is eventually going to be the starter, and I don't think that's going to happen till week four. So to answer your question, I look at it, I think Kendall Lamb is actually going to start the season opener, and then Ty Cimbrello will continue to be a rotational guy that they could plug in at left and right. And you got Quisenberry, David Quisenberry, who, you know, will be a depth guy at, all over the place, and, you know, Raiders will eventually take over.
How do you think they're going to treat – like, what would Raiden's have to do in camp and preseason to just shoot up that depth chart that you just threw out there? What would he – I mean, would do you think they truly think, hey, this is going to be kind of like Nate Davis, right? They're going to be – it's going to take time. We're going to – he's going to have to go through the proper steps, and then, you know, maybe by middle of the year he's ready to – you know, what would he have to do to shoot up that depth chart ranking?
Well, I think it really comes down to one thing, and what Keith Carter, I love hearing Coach Carter coach those guys up, and one thing that he consistently says is play with speed and violence. And I think that's what he's going to have to do in a nutshell. And to kind of elaborate or expand upon that, really, you know, what it comes down to is when you're asked to fire off the football and drive the man back, you got to do it. And when you're asked to be reliable and pass pro, right, and keep the big investment safe, you got to do it. And it also comes down to not having to be told, okay, you know, what the heck were you thinking? This was, you know, 68 toss and you're doing this when your steps are supposed to be like this. Or, you know, on this stretch play, your job is to get a hand on the defensive end and move up to work your way up to the linebacker. Why the heck did you stay with the deep? Those type of things. I think that's what you want to avoid. And fortunately for Dylan Raiden's his sake, I've seen a progression, you know, going from rookie minicamp to this point now, and there were very rare moments where he had to be coached up after a play. Now, I mean, granted, you know, you're going to have certain things that have to be touched up and cleaned up just in the interest of relentlessly pursuing perfection, you know. So that's something that you're going to come up with, but I think really it's just going to be just – consistently maintaining his assignment and just doing what he's asked to do and continuing to learn and get a better grasp. And it's just like anything, when you have a good grasp of the direction that you're going and the things that you're being asked to do, you're going to be more productive.
We're talking to Teron Davenport, Titans NFL Nation reporter for ESPN. And I know another position battle we're all going to pay attention to is going to be tight end. Now, you went out to tight end you. You saw what they were doing last week. Did you find somebody, or was there anybody that stood out to you that maybe John Robinson and the Titans could look at?
I didn't have my recruiting hat on. I did talk to
maybe
Zach
some Erdman. Guy named Delaney.
Yeah, D Love, Delaney Walker. Yes. You know, he was out there moving really well. I'll say that. And obviously, the ankle is something that a lot of people are concerned with. But for me, just watching him. Just the suddenness, right? Being able to start and stop. Like, if your ankle is bad, you're not going to be able to do that and do it over and over again. And I saw him do that, you know, and he actually was in there. I forget who the other tight end was he was working with, but he was one of the guys that was given instruction and detailed information on how to get a release and, you know, how to free yourself up at the line of scrimmage. I thought that was really interesting, but. You know, I bumped into Michael Pruitt as well. You know, got to talk to him a little bit, gave him some spots to see out there in the Bay. You know, that's one of my favorite cities. So I, you know, gave him a little rundown there. But I think really at this point, you know, it's Firkser, Anthony Firkser, sticky fingers, man. It's really on him, and he's gotten noticeably bigger, like in the legs, and he's another sudden guy. He runs routes really well, and it's just watching. He and Michael Pruitt were working together, and I was just focusing on how his releases are. And it's funny, because I asked him back at his camp, you know, if he had a basketball background, and he laughed and asked me why. But I told him it looks like you're trying to cross somebody over when you come off the ball and also on the top of your routes, and that was exactly the case. So it was good watching these guys firsthand work on different things. And let me tell you this, I always admired, like, the sauce and stuff that Travis Kelce would put on his routes, but actually listening to him explain the why and the details and the technique that goes into it, that was awesome. Like, they could have had that camp for 4 hours, and I would have just sat there listening to him just in awe of how much he was able to break it down and really teach the other guys. I mean, there were points where they just said, hey, all right, we're going to work on the top of the route. Kelce, come here. And he just stepped right out there. And, you know, I love passion and enthusiasm, yeah. You know, so he would step right out there, show it, and then give a quick, woo, you know, Ric Flair style. So I just, man, I enjoyed it, man. And George Kittle, high energy dude. It was great watching him, you know, show the guys some stuff about blocking and just exploding off of the ball. Darren Waller, you know, seeing him.
I love him.
There was a video that I got of him. I laid down in on the turf, and I had the camera pointing up, and I was right there at the break point, and it's just like he was running. It looked like he was about to run right into the screen, but, you know, no fear, man. I didn't flinch. He kept the camera on him, and it was a nice shot.
So we had Jordan Matthews, longtime mm-hmm. Vanderbilt wide receiver, on with us, and he was there. He was at tight end U as he's trying to convert to a tight end. I don't know how much you got to see of him, if you got to talk to him at all, but what do you think about that, of a wide receiver guy that's played wide receiver his whole career now making the transition?
Well, that news was broken on Talking with TV.
Yeah, that's right.
He told me, and we were just talking about, and it's just crazy how it happened, because I was just asking him about being a bigger slot receiver, and then that's when he just kind of went right into how he's seen the game get smaller from the outside all the way to the inside to tight end, to in line. And he was like, well, you know, I'm going to put on some weight and maintain agility, speed, you know, and move to tight end. And I talked to him a little bit more on Thursday about it. And I talked to him Friday, the day after. And he told me that it was really good getting the opportunity to learn some things from the guys. And he made some good points. And because as receivers, right, what we're trained to do, like, we don't know the snap count. I mean, like, we know it, but we don't really pay attention to that. You're paying attention to the ball. As soon as that ball is hiked, you know, or moves just a little bit, you're gone. You know, you're always on the ball. But as the tight end, you have to be on the snap count. And Jordan and I, we were talking about that. And it just the difference is a subtle difference, right? As a receiver, you got your one foot on the line of scrimmage and you're looking down the line, right? So you're able to see. You look down the line, you look at the coverage, you know what I mean? You look down the line, and right before, like, when the quarterback's in his cadence, you're down the line, one eye kind of on the ball, the other eye just looking at what the secondary is doing. And it's different as a tight end, right? You can't be looking down the line on the ball, because you got to shoot out of your stance and just kind of, like, get explosiveness out of that. And that's the big thing that he's working on, is really just, you know, getting used to being in the three-point stance. And it sounds elementary, but when all your life you've been working from the stand-up position, right, the two-point, it's different, you know.
Sure.
So that's what he's working on. But fortunately, with how this game is, the way that they're using tight ends, you know, he wouldn't always have to be in line. They could flex him. You know, he could be detached just right off the ball, like in a wing type situation. You could send him in motion and do different things. So it was cool talk. He told me that he was really watching Evan Engram, Irv Smith Jr., and there was somebody else. I forget who it was. But he was really watching them because the body types are similar and some of the things that they're asked to do. But he's healthy. He's good to go. You know, clean bill of health. He was moving, you know, pretty well and obviously catching the football well. And I think a team's going to benefit, you know, from bringing him aboard. And it'll be a good addition for them that I think will pay off.
Yeah, and it definitely was on Talking with TD. I apologize for not bringing that up. So thanks for catching me there. Another guy, I was listening to the morning show earlier, and they brought up somebody that is still a free agent, and this just surprises me. How surprised are you that Kenny Vaccaro is still available?
I'm not really surprised, honestly.
Why?
You know, and this was because it's just the way the game goes. Like, he's at the point where he's a free agent that's going to be a plug-and-play addition. And I mean, that's where he was before he got here, right? Now, obviously, there were other things involved, you know, no trouble or anything like that, but interest that he had as far as, you know, along the lines of the Eric Reed situation and you know, being for the cause, so to speak. And look, teams won't tell you, but it scares some of them away. Trust, I know enough to say that convincingly. And I think now at this point, you know, he's obviously a few years older than he was back then, but, you know, he's just a guy that I'm sure is on speed dial. You know, somebody goes down, boom. Or if you don't like the flavor that your defense has as far as, like, you want to influx just, you know, a killer mindset, right, you know, or influx toughness to your locker room, call 24. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's really what it comes down to, and I think that's the situation. He's achieved mercenary status where he's basically a hired gun. You know, come in here, I need you to help me with this, this, and this, and that's pretty much it.
As we wrap this up, I know you got a feature coming up on Christian Fulton. You've done a lot of good things with him, but he's got a cool place called The Trenches that you're going to be talking about here very soon.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a feature in the coming weeks. I got to sit down with Christian Fulton as well as his brother, Keith Fulton, and their shop is right there on Buchanan Street. Great area, you know, a beautiful vibe. So definitely go check it out. And it's a mixture of art, fashion, and something that I love, sneakers, you know. So fashion and sneakers, hey, I'm going to be there. And they have a lot of unique pieces and things like that, and I'll be going to add to my collection because, you know, we got to keep the bow tie swag on 100, and
that's
what we're working to do. But it's just a great idea that they came up with, and the story is really cool. I'll definitely share more, obviously, in the future, but it's not one of those things where it was just like, hey, I'm an athlete, I'm doing this. You know, there was a lot of work. Shout out to Keith Fulton, you know, the Vision One. He did an excellent job of just actually having that vision, you know, and just seeing things out. And, you know, I really, really respect the grind that he went through. And just the name, The Trenches, you know, there's something special to it because that's what a lot of us had to go through to get to a point of where we're somewhat successful, right? Because you never settle. You know, success to me and to a lot of us is just, it's an ongoing journey. So I just, you know, the name is perfect, The Trenches, because that's what we rose from, you know?
Something I've done in the past at both a public library and at schools, I've read to kids. Was it the rookies? How did the rookies do last week?
Hey, that was fun, man. And Blake Harville, let me tell you, he has this book called Jabari Jumps, and it's not his book. It's just one that he was kind of like promoting, and it was hilarious, man. The kids had a great time. You know, all of the rookies, they were there. Caleb Farley, he talked about the importance of reading. And you know, Rashad Weaver talked about how, as a kid, he hated to read, but he understood that it was something he had to do. And he said even to this day he hates reading, but he does it, and it really helps him with retention when it comes time to looking at the playbook and being able to retain it. And I think, you know, in this day and age where – you have just such, everything is microwavable, right? I think it is important to sit down and read a book because it makes your brain develop differently, you know, and there's a lot of things going on in schools that should be, like, not going on in schools that should be, you know, like music, gym class, you know, more emphasis on reading books. So it was great to see that happen. And the Titans, I'll say, you know, I've covered the 49ers, the Ravens, the Eagles, and now the Titans. And, you know, when it comes to giving back to the community and just being involved and rolling up the sleeves, digging in and doing stuff, they've been outstanding. And that's coming from, you know, a viewpoint from four different teams, right? And just in all aspects, they've been great. You know, Miss Amy Adams Strunk donating stuff to different causes, right? You know, in the black community, in the women's community, what she's done as far as developing her programs for women to be able to work towards front office positions and scouting positions. And then even, you know, let's talk about the tornado relief, what they did. I mean, you got Mike Vrabel and John Robinson literally boots on the ground carrying cases of water and loading up a truck and driving it and doing that stuff. So I really wanted to shout them out for that. And even, you know, the reading thing that they did that last Monday, it's remarkable seeing it. And I'm proud to be able to cover a team that does that and kind of shine light on it.
Yep, no doubt about it. Enjoy the visits as always. You have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Yeah, for sure. And we got a nice one for you on Talking with TD this week. That right there is what we call a teaser, so stay tuned.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Check it out.
Teron Davenport, presented by Freedom Tire Guys, Nashville's premier mobile tire company. Online at freedomtireguys.com. He joins us every Monday at 11 o'clock. So check out Talking with TD this week. He just gave you a good little tease, good reason to check it out. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donica, Chase. Don't forget, This Is What I Know. Coming up at 11:45, we've got a great prize. Tickets to see Jimmy Buffett and the Coral Reefer Band at Ascend Amphitheater in mid-July. So a little bit less than a month away. So a lot more coming here on the DDC, ESPN 102.5 The Game.